Don't get rid of Za'Darius Smith. Don't get rid of Danielle Hunter. I can't believe we have to do this, but here we are.
You like it on 3-1-2-3?
You like it!
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day. You can also find the show on Amazon Fire or Roku. Just go to the Locked On Minnesota Sports app. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. Today we're talking about the edge department, and a lot of people want to get rid of them. In fact, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put out a Twitter poll. Go vote on it on Twitter. I really want to see. Maybe this is a vocal minority thing. But it really seems like there is a growing movement to cut Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter for cap space. There are a lot of problems with that. And I am here to inform you of them if you didn't know about them already, and then talk about their evaluations as a whole a little bit. But we also have to get a little philosophical about like what cap space is for. Because I think it's really easy to fall into the allure of the best thing cap space can be and assume you're making the trade for that instead of the true range of outcomes that it represents. So we're going to go all the way through all of that stuff. But first, let me do a Twitter poll real quick. In case you couldn't tell by my tone, though, I, of course, fall on the side of don't touch them. Don't do anything. The only problem I have with the contracts Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith have is that they do not last for long enough. Danielle Hunter is slated to become a free agent in 2024, and his contract will void out, and I think that is a problem that you could address next offseason, but I think it would be more efficient to do it this offseason, and Za'Darius Smith's contract only lasts 2 years. I would love to put more years, maybe, you know, not super committed guaranteed money years, but even if they're just funny money years, something that can be negotiated later that can keep him in the building, I would love to keep Za'Darius Smith around. I think he proved that he had a lot of juice left in the tank over the course of the 2022 season. And the money he's making right now is very much worth it. So let's start by talking about the actual contract. Za'Darius Smith's contract, he will cost $15.5 million in 2023. Now, I think a lot of people react to that number as though it's really, really, really high because it's a big number. I mean, shoot. 5 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago is probably more accurate, the quarterbacks were making $15 million, and we thought it would, you know, our eyes would bug out. But the cap environment has changed so much that that's actually a really low-end deal for an edge rusher. For comparison, Robert Quinn makes about that much right now for the Eagles, at least in terms of like average per year. If we actually want to go to 2023 cap hits in particular to be a little bit more precise, that lands him around Carl Lawson or Trey Hendrickson. It's not exactly Joey Bosa money. And Danielle Hunter's $13 million cap hit lands him between Romeo Okwara and Preston Smith. Of those three teams, the Lions with Okwara, Danielle Hunter with the Vikings, and the Packers with Preston Smith, who do you think is getting the most out of their $13-ish million? And Okwara is actually making $14.5 million, so between the two contracts. It's a really low number, and I get that it looks... when you go to like over the cap in the calculator, I think cutting Za'Darius Smith is the single move that they can make that saves them the most cap space. So you go, well, they need cap space. That's the biggest chunk. Let's go do it. Stinks because, you know, they don't have the good players, but they shouldn't have got themselves in this situation in the first place. And that's what you got to do when you get into debt. And that's not the way to run a team, is to say, ah, well, I just guess I should face the music because I deserve this. No, the way to build a team is to be as greedy as possible, right? If you cut Za'Darius Smith, you save, I think, like $13 million is what you save on the contract, $12 million. And then if you cut Danielle Hunter, you actually, the contract becomes more expensive than it otherwise would have been because of the way that it's been structured. But with Za'Darius Smith, it's a lot more. Okay, $12 million is a tasty looking chunk. But does $12 million turn into a guy that's better than Za'Darius Smith? If you just turn that around and put it right back into the edge rushing market, you get John Franklin Myers. So would you rather have John Franklin Myers, and forget age and stuff like that, I'm just talking quality of play. Would you rather have John Franklin Myers or Za'Darius Smith? I'm taking Za'Darius Smith every single time. But I understand that a lot of people don't believe that. I hear a million times I've heard, well, but he fell off a little in the back half of 2023. And I just don't think that's true at all. I think that's just people looking at sack totals and mistaking it for comprehensive analysis. So that bugs me. I'm a little annoyed. You might be able to tell. And I will go deeper into refuting that when we actually evaluate these guys. But just to understand the situation of the contract, the money you would save by cutting Za'Darius Smith, if you put that back into the market, A, you create a need at edge rusher. And I don't think that money on its own fills that need at edge rusher. You basically just have to nail a draft pick now, which, yeah, if you could just guarantee that you would nail a draft pick, I would probably be way more in favor of cutting veterans for rookie contract deals and you know, saving money that way. But also, draft picks are a resource in and of themselves. And so saving cap space and, in effect, creating a need that's going to cost you draft picks is kind of like changing currencies. It's like going to the currency exchange, giving them some dollars, getting some pounds back and saying, look at all these pounds that I earned today. You didn't, though. You just exchanged. As for Danielle Hunter's contract, if you were going to get rid of him or trade him, you'd have to do it post June 1st to save any money. The reason for that is that he has almost $12 million in void year money that has to be accounted for. And you would need to push that into next year because right now he is making $13.1 million. And if you cut him, you would only say his base salary is only $5 million this year. He made most of the money from his contract last year in terms of actual cash flow. So you would only be able to save that money and a little bit in some bonuses, and then all the void year money would accelerate, meaning your cap charge gets higher if you cut him. So that is not a feasible move. And trading him or cutting him post-June is also not that efficient because then you are saddled with $11.2 million of dead cap next year. We had $9 million of dead cap in 2022 from Anthony Barr, and that felt like it was a huge burden. 11.2 would be insane. And again, you create a need at edge rusher. And that is what I really want to drive home here, because I think we've gotten a little too obsessed with cap space. And this happens every year. This is the year where every cap dollar is the most sacred thing in the entire world. But eventually, cap dollars have to be spent on players for them to get their value. And if you cannot spend a cap dollar and get more value than you already were spending it on, like, keep the guy you were spending it on. It's very easy, I think, in the off-season game to get wrapped up in singular resources, right? And really, the off-season is a resource management game. That's why stuff like Ultimate Pro Football GM is so fun. When you have a resource management game, the real strategy comes in by understanding that everything in it is a resource, like poker is a resource management game. And you not only do you have your chips as a resource, your hand is a resource, right? And whether or not you fold it or keep it is kind of how you play that resource. Your previous history is a resource. If you, say, win a hand on a bluff and then you show that you were bluffing, you have now leveraged that resource in a way to make the other players think that you bluff more often, and then maybe you can play up on that later and get them to call something they wouldn't otherwise call. Every single thing is your outfit is a resource at a poker game, right? But how distracting do you want to be, or do you want to wear sunglasses and stuff? And I think in the off-season game, understanding that everything is a resource will help you understand the strategies that teams employ a lot more. Players on your roster are a resource. And to sell players on your roster to get cap space that will eventually go back into players on your roster is basically what we're talking about when we talk about like the cap casualties of the world. So if you do that, if you cut Za'Darius Smith, you take that $12 million, you spend it on an edge rusher to get a younger one, you probably get like Marcus Davenport. And my question to you, dear listener, at what point does Marcus Davenport become better than Za'Darius Smith? Let's say your answer to that is in a year, let's say, maybe not next year, but maybe in 2024, Za'Darius Smith will be old enough that his play will have declined beneath the level of one Marcus Davenport. So then my question becomes, why don't we just get rid of him then? Why do we got to do it early? Seems like he's a pretty efficient deal right now. Let's take advantage of that while it exists, no? But that has to be an efficient exchange. With Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter, unless you're way higher on DJ Wonnum than anyone I've ever met, that doesn't really exist here. And I agree with the idea that, all right, yeah, eventually you want to get out of these contracts. Let's draft an edge rusher and see if we can't Brian Asamoah this. All for that. I think that's great. But doing it without having a backup plan, you're just creating a need that you're going to have to spend more resources to fill. You're spinning your wheels, and you're not really getting forward at all. It's very one step forward, two steps back to do that. And if you can see outside the kind of current moment, you know, imagine now being in August. Okay, what does the roster become? You're probably not doing better than Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter if you cut them both just for the cap space. That's where I want to get you. But a lot of people don't think those players even played well, which I think is even more insane than the cap. At least I understand the, you know, you just want to cut players for cap space. But the idea that these guys didn't play well blows my mind. And I have to state my case there. So we'll get into it. But first, how about we talked about LinkedIn jobs? If you work a small business, a lot of the stuff I just said probably isn't news to you. Hiring is one way to really make the most of your resources. That hire is a way to make it super efficient. Your staff is a resource to you and one that you need to treat with the right care and go through the right processes with, and LinkedIn is there to help you do it. They go beyond just resume data. They've got 875 million user profiles that will help you find the most qualified candidates, and then a whole bunch of other tools that will help you narrow that thing down. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants based on your job qualifications and the stuff that makes your small business special. So LinkedIn Jobs will help you find those qualified candidates that you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNFL. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNFL to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Moving on, let's talk about the edge department actually on the field, all right? Hopefully we understand the resources available with deciding whether to cut them or whatever, but I don't think that the general zeitgeist has a great sense for how these guys played, because it was really hard to see on TV and even harder to capture statistically, because defense is super symbiotic, and that is also reflected in just the general instability of defensive stats. If you look at like defensive DVOA, the correlations for that year to year are like really bad statistically. And same thing with a lot of the like PFF war stuff. A lot of the things that PFF tracks are really unstable year to year. And you'll hear it in the way that like PFF does their analysis, kind of saying defense is unsustainable and it regresses, and they will sort of downplay the value of defensive players. But to me, I think that it's just because it's such a symbiotic system, and the Vikings were a great example of why, and these edge rushers were really the victims of it. So when you look at statistics for pass rushers, there's two I think that are going to be the most common for people who are willing to look beyond sacks. And if you're somebody who is screaming at your phone or your laptop or whatever, or maybe your Amazon Fire or Roku, download the Locked On Minnesota Sports app. If you're screaming at me saying, Za'Darius Smith only got a sack and a half in the second half of the season, he totally fell off, why are we caping for him so hard? If you're yelling, if your eyes are popping out of your socket, I implore you to ask, how could I possibly think that a player who didn't get a lot of sacks still played well? Like, genuinely, what do you think I'm getting at here? I am not evaluating the back half of Za'Darius Smith's season on two plays, or the fact that there weren't seven more plays. That's still only nine plays. Pressures are the other stat, and pass rush win rate is the ESPN version of that, I would say. PFF pressures and pass rush win rate. And I believe SIS has pressures too, Sports Info Solutions, but I don't have that. In pressures, we'll start with Danielle Hunter, because Danielle Hunter's pressure production left a lot to be desired, I guess, for a lot of people earlier in the season. And Ed Donatell even came out and said he's just getting used to things, it'll come around. And it did come around. It really came around. By season's end, in terms of total pressures generated, and this is a volume stat, so keep that in mind, but Danielle Hunter was tied for seventh in the league with Josh Allen. Seventh most pressures, tied for. Now, if you wanted to convert that into a rate stat, there is a volume thing going on here. He goes to 38th. So he is benefiting just from just having a lot of pass rushes, which makes sense because we had games like the Bills game and the Colts game that were a lot longer and stuff. And I am just talking, regular season and postseason here. So teams that went deeper in the postseason also have an advantage for that, but there's still like a lot of volume for Danielle Hunter. However, 38th among all edge rushers who played a single snap, which gives you some weird sample size stuff with some of that. So let's say edge rushers who played half the snaps, so starters. Among starting edge rushers, 19th. People who qualify goes, that is a 56 deep list. So 19th of 56. So at the very least above average. And that is including a sort of rough beginning of the season. So if you want to call this a down year for Danielle Hunter, because he dropped from being a top 10 pressure generator to like a top 20 pressure generator, I guess you could do that. Getting him off of the roster for that would be a pretty insane overreaction to it, especially considering that the Vikings are going away from this game. If you want to try to pinpoint why Danielle Hunter did not produce as much, but still was pretty good, you don't need to explain a lot, right? Because this was not as dramatic a drop-off as you would think if you just like read the papers. You could probably say that it's something to do with scheme familiarity, and that problem would ostensibly be fixed if Brian Flores goes back to asking Danielle Hunter to do things as similarly to the way that Mike Zimmer did. Now, I don't know if it's going to be entirely similar. I think he'll be stunting and looping a lot more, where Zimmer was a lot more about just, you just take that right tackle all day long and do your thing. And sort of the point of it was that he was going against the same guy all day long and he could set stuff up and then subvert it. So it's a little different there, but definitely, yeah, you're probably getting him out of the 2-point stance. You're not going to be backing him into coverage except on extremely rare scenarios. It's still a quote-unquote 3-4, but the differences there are, I don't think, going to be material to Danielle Hunter's pass rush. I don't think it's going to change very much. You're still lining up at 5 technique and rushing against tackles most of the time, unless there's a stunt, which Brian Flores will use more of. What about pass rush win rate? That's the other one that people cite. And I don't have the pass rush win rate in front of me, so I don't know how Danielle Hunter did there, but I will say, use caution there. Pass rush win rate is calculated via tracking data, and I believe the criteria is get within a yard of the quarterback before 2.5 seconds. But a lot of Vikings plays, the ball was out before 2.5 seconds was up, and then the players would let up, right? So you maybe would have won the rep, but you didn't get there in time because there wasn't enough time because the coverage was so bad, which we've talked about at length, why that is, but that doesn't have anything to do with Danielle Hunter. I think the take that the coverage let Danielle Hunter down is very sound, and I think it's the same thing for Za'Darius Smith. And so when you're watching on TV, it looks like the quarterback dropped back, wasn't pressured through the ball, right? But keep in mind that there is a time element to this. If the quarterback dropped back, waited for 4 seconds, then threw the ball, that looks a lot worse on the pass rush than if they got it out at the top of their drop and the pass rush didn't have any time to do it. That shouldn't be controversial. And I think Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter were both pretty big victims of that. But let's talk about Za'Darius Smith as well, because I think he's the one, as this poll populates that I posted as we started recording here. Very few people actually want to get rid of Danielle Hunter. Most people want to get rid of either both of them, which is wild to me, or Za'Darius Smith. But I will say about 2/3 of everyone don't want to cut any of these guys. This might be a vocal minority I'm talking to, which is worth it. All right, vocal minority, I love you. And I am talking to you. All right. So we'll get into Za'Darius Smith. I think that that's a more nuanced conversation about what Za'Darius Smith offers and the quote unquote drop off in the back half of the year and all that stuff. But before we do that, hey, there's a football game coming up on Sunday. and you should gramble on it if you so choose. And if you do, you should use FanDuel, which is our Lockdown's new betting partner. We're really excited about it because they're the number one sportsbook in America. They have so many great features that make betting super fun, super easy, all kinds of fun prop bets. Maybe we'll even do a grambling segment or something. But I know this is a Vikings podcast, so, you know, we won't go too hard on that stuff. But you should tell me what your prop bets are. Send them to me. And if you want, you can download FanDuel right now. If you haven't signed up, because then you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no sweat first bet. You get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. The FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use, and you get paid your winnings instantly if you want. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/LockedOn to claim your no sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. So with both Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith, if I were to actually get into a film thing, I've talked mostly stats here on this show so far, and if I were to actually get into a film thing, a technique thing, watch their hands. Watch any old play. You'll watch a few. You'll get to one eventually. Pretty quickly, I think, because it's common. But watch both of their hands. Their hands are lightning quick, and it really makes it a lot easier for them to deflect chippers, to get around multiple blocks quickly, to navigate, and to not lose momentum, which is really important for someone like Hunter, who has chipped a lot, and then later in the season, Za'Darius Smith started getting chipped more. To be able to get around them without them getting into your shoulders and kind of knocking you backwards and ruining your balance, ruining your momentum, you need to have quick hands to kind of Mr. Miyagi that and say, like, get off me and sort of deflect their influence. Danielle Hunter's incredible at it, and Za'Darius Smith's hands are really good. A lot of times, his pressure will come up through the interior. His superpower has always been beating guards and centers one-on-one. But again, that requires some looping for... the way Donatel did it was lining up Za'Darius Smith at edge and then having him loop back around, which took longer. And you'd get a one-on-one with the center and you'd win that one-on-one instantly, but the ball would already be out because you had to go across two gaps first, and that took 1.8 seconds, and that's all Daniel Jones needed to get the ball away, right? To a wide-open guy over the middle because the coverage sucked. So it sort of neutralized everything these guys could be because the back end couldn't hold their end of the bargain. Now Za'Darius Smith was almost, I think he was leading the league in pressures at one point, in the early part of the season. He gets a knee contusion and then things slow down. And I think people are forgetting that, like, he was playing through a knee injury. It was a minor one, and it was certainly not one that's going to, have any bearing on future years, but, like, he was playing through something that had him on the injury report. Like, it was at least serious enough for that. So yeah, that will drop his play a little bit, and what his injury concerns are, I think the answer to that was pretty positive. And I've seen that too. Like, oh, he's an injury concern. Okay. What injury, which injury are you talking about? Is he a concern to get another knee contusion next year? I would say he's at the same risk as everybody else is of that. Really what you're probably talking about is the fact that he missed like most of 2 years with the Packers. And that was because of a herniated disc in his back. I don't remember if it was herniated or ruptured or just bulging. Either way, a disc issue in his back, and he had to have surgery for that. It was actually the same surgery that Danielle Hunter had. J.J. Watt had it too. J.J. Watt had a long and fruitful career afterwards. Sometimes it will rear its ugly head. For Watt, it kind of happened twice, and he had to get the surgery twice. For Danielle Hunter, it has happened once, and then he has come back from it now, and he's had 2 years. He had his pec injury, which was unrelated. For Za'Darius Smith, he did play every game, and I don't think people were expecting him to. I think if you were to say, I'm concerned about his injury, and somebody said, okay, would you be happy if he played every game? Would that assuage your concerns? I think most rational people would say yes. And well, he did. But that back injury is always going to be a little bit more of a risk. So if you just don't want to have anything to do with a guy who ever had a herniated disc and you just don't want it, then I would say, okay, you probably didn't like the signing in the first place then. But keeping him on the roster is the same bet the Vikings have already made. So why wouldn't they make it again? They've already kind of shown that they're not worried about it. They already paid him. But even if I grant you that, and even if I say, okay, yeah, no, he did fall off in the back half of the season, and maybe it was because of the injury, maybe it was just because he got old and he's 33 or whatever, and that means he just wasn't good anymore. Okay, what does not good Za'Darius Smith look like then? Because he's not a potato, right? He's still some level of player. So what level of player is that? And if you look at it, let's go. Somebody on Reddit got really mad at me because I decided to say back half of the season, quote unquote, was week 9 onward. I figured I'd just take week 9, middle of the season, and figured that I would do that onward. Well, weeks 9 and 10 were Za'Darius Smith's best games. So of course he won't look as good if you draw it around those ones, but to be charitable, let's do that. So let's say week 11 onward, the last eight games of the season, he ranked in total pressures generated, Za'Darius Smith, he ranked 28th out of a group of 52 possible edge rushers. So call it middle of the pack. And remember, I drew this specifically around his worst or his best games. So I'm cherry picking this to make him look as bad as I possibly can. And I got him to average. You just can't convince me that this was a bad year. I mean, he made the Pro Bowl, for goodness sake. Like, you have to ignore so many things and gymnastics your way through so many loops. Only Elastigirl can do the mental gymnastics required to convince yourself that Za'Darius Smith is a bad year and deserves to be cut over it. And by the way, if you take those weeks and you just go with total pressures generated, Danielle Hunter ascended to seventh and outproduced guys like Khalil Mack and Myles Garrett in that same time span. So there also might have been something going on there where defenses started paying more attention to Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter took over, which kind of leads me back to the symbiotic nature of defense and why keeping the pair together is also important. It does kind of seem like if you stopped one, the other one got you. That's pretty important to keep. And if you get rid of Za'Darius Smith and say, well, but we've got DJ Wanham at home, then teams are just going to be able to put all their resources into stopping Danielle Hunter. And unless you believe in DJ Wanham's ability to be the next Za'Darius Smith, I don't think you're going to have a very good pass rush, and you've made the team worse. Perhaps their cap situation looks less scary on the website, but they'll lose less games and they'll lose more games. And ultimately, is your goal to have a better looking situation on the cap website or to win more games? You might want more cap space so that you can get better players, but to the end of ultimately winning more games. And I just don't think this gets you there. I think this loses you more games in the long term and in the short term. This isn't about some all-in thing either. Za'Darius Smith's under contract for two more years. And that brings me back to, okay, what do we do about these contracts? Extend these dudes. They're criminally underpaid. Danielle Hunter is slated to leave in 2024. Za'Darius Smith is slated to leave in 2025. I want them to stay here until they retire. That's where I'm at on these guys. And if that means paying them a little bit more money, they've earned it. And as always, Skol.